The following podcast will contain spoilers, tangents, hot takes, and excessive foul language. Viewer discretion is advised. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, horror fans, and welcome to episode 253 of Frightmares. I'm your host, Austin Proctor, and joining me today for 2015's Green Room is my buddy, Michael Viers.
Hey, everyone. I love Green Room.
I just want to say I am infatuated with this movie. It's a good time. Yeah, Green Room.
It's really good vibes all around.
Yeah, sure. Definitely some sort of vibe. No,
A24 vibes?
A24 vibes. If you say that in the A24 group, though, people will lose their mind.
Oh, I hate that group with a fucking burning passion, but I can't leave it because it's a dumpster fire.
I know. It's like I can't stand the group because everyone in there is insane. But
no one hates A24 movies more than A24 fans.
more than the A24 group. Oh my God.
Hell, even one of the reviews I looked at when I was writing this was like, why can't A24 write good characters? Because they don't write them, you fucking dumbass.
Yeah, they don't do that at all. They release movies. They're a production company. They produce movies sometimes, but typically they're a production house. They buy movies and then they release them.
Distribution.
There we go. Not production. I was looking for distribution. Thank you.
Golly. It's cool. Anyways, I've already derailed your show. Continue your stuff.
No, that I love the derailment because it's on topic. A24.
He wrote it in. You wrote my derailment into your format.
I'm just going to write Michael derails every five lines, but that's perfect because then that gets us off on a tangent that's usually fun. We're actually streaming live to Facebook right now.
Hi, Mom.
Oh, hi, Mom. Is she watching?
Maybe. I don't know. Mom, if you're watching, go to the comments. Tell us.
Yeah, everyone listening to the recording on your favorite podcast app, this does not apply to you, but we decided to go live on Facebook today just because... It's 10 in the morning, 10:30 in the morning, and we're having a good time, and wanted to share the love with Green Room and have everyone relive the moments that we are about to relive on this microphone here.
We're going to relive them good.
Oh, my God. This movie, I don't think I've ever had my butthole puckered for 90 minutes, but this movie, every time I watch it, not just the first time, every single, I know the outcome at this point. Like, I know what's going to happen. I know what's going on. But even still last night watching it, I'm just like, I'm so uncomfortable.
When I saw this in the theaters, it was one of the few times that I felt my hands white knuckling on the
seat. Yeah.
And I was so tense. And then the same way when I rewatched it recently too. And like, I couldn't remember all the details of you know, what was going to transpire. But I remembered a lot of it, and I was still like, no.
Yeah, you're just
why are you doing this?
It's very tense. It's very claustrophobic at moments, too, because it's a very contained movie. And there's a lot to be said about this one. That's why I wanted to talk about it. That's why I was glad that you were excited to talk about it as well, because apparently you hadn't seen it since its release.
Yeah.
So you haven't seen this since 2015 in theaters.
Yeah, I've gone back and rewatched scenes because, fun fact for you all, for those who know me and my filmmaking career, I'm a filmmaker. What I will do when I'm preparing for something is I will not necessarily always rewatch full movies if it's a movie I know pretty well. I'll go back and rewatch scenes to kind of put myself in a certain headspace to get myself ready to kind of get an idea of like tension, tone, and kind of analyze scenes just to kind of get an idea of what I might want to do. And then I'll also like make I'll handpick movies for other people. I don't always have time for that because sometimes productions come together way too fast, but I like to, like, oh, I want you to watch this movie and pay attention to this performance, or I want you to pay attention to the way the camera moves in this movie, shit like that. So yeah. Like, I've gone back and rewatched scenes from this movie.
Okay.
But not rewatch the movie as a whole.
Well, speaking of rewatching movies or even just watching movies for the first time, have you been watching anything good lately? I like to talk about that up top.
I only watch good movies. I don't watch junk
movies. I mean, if you listen to your show, every single one of the movies that you pick has like a fucking four. I swear to God, every single one of the movies that is reviewed on the Shameless Picture Show is like 3.6, 3.7, 4.0. Well, it's because
the whole point of the show is to watch movies that I've missed out on.
So. I know, but like they're always, every time I go look at something, like Smithereens, I was like 3.6. Why am I not surprised? everything is such a good rating, so I know you're always watching good shit. So what have you watched recently? Okay,
so I've watched, how far back do you want me to go? Jesus.
I don't know, like past week. What have you watched?
All right, past week. Let me, because I usually watch about one to two movies, like about one movie. I try to watch one movie a day. I try. All yeah, right. So same. I'll go back to, so I will say, I'm going to go back a little farther than the week. I had a good run of movies okay. at the end of last month. I went Thomas Crown Affair, the original from 68 with Steve McQueen and Faye Dunaway. I reviewed that for Kino Lorber. Never seen it before. Four stars. Four stars and a heart.
Nice. Okay.
This one I've never seen, but I wanted, after a long day of shooting, I wanted something easy, breezy, beautiful cover girl. So I watched 13 Going on 30.
Yes!
Yeah, I've never seen it before.
You've never seen it before?
No, not until then.
Oh,
no.
Shit. That's, I love that movie. I will
four
die on that.
Four
hill.
Stars and a heart.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's what I gave it.
I watched Dream Scenario, that Nicolas Cage flick.
Yeah.
Four and a half and a heart.
Ooh, okay. I've heard that one is just such a good time.
and then I watched from, I decided me and Amanda were, cause we did a Jack Nicholson double feature earlier in the month with The Shooting and Ride the Whirlwind, two early Nicholson performances. And Amanda was talking about, like, I recognize him, but he doesn't sound the same. He doesn't look the same. And I was like, well, especially cause like, as like Jack Nicholson that we know from like, when we were younger, he definitely looked different. So I was like, I was trying to think, I was like, what was the first Jack Nicholson movie I saw? It was probably, if it wasn't Batman,
yeah,
it was probably Anger Management. Like, or like, I might have seen him in movies.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't process who he was.
Who he was, yeah.
So, like, you know, 13 years old, this probably, like, it was probably Batman, Anger Management, maybe the sister, like the Witches of Eastwick, something like
yes, that. The Witches of Eastwick. Yeah, Gabby showed that to
me. We decided to get from the library Anger Management. That movie does not hold up as well as it did when I was a kid.
Oh, damn. Oh, no.
Two and a half stars.
Oh, no.
and then I watched the, speaking of A24, the A24 Showtime show, The Curse.
Okay.
No rating because I have no idea how to fucking rate that movie, that TV show. I don't know if I, it's one of those things like I flip flop between loving it and fucking hated it. It's very strange. And then obviously Green Room, which I'm not going to spoil.
Yes.
But if anyone who's on my letterbox will see.
Okay. I have not looked. Past week for me, I've watched way too much shit, but some standouts for me. I watched a movie called Frightmare, funny enough, from 1981.
Nice.
I loved it. A 3.5 with a heart. I watched Hell Comes to Frogtown for the first time.
I fucking love Hell Comes to Frogtown.
It's a movie about Rowdy Roddy Piper being pimped out by the government because he's a fertile male to impregnate women ready. And it's so ridiculous. And the frog costumes are fucking wild. So three and a half of the heart.
I love Hell Comes to Frogtown. So this movie hits some sweet spots for me. One, post-apocalyptic movie.
Check.
One. Two, movie with a pro wrestler. It is officially a pro wrestling movie.
Yeah. Okay, check.
It is a movie with an overly specific title that tells you what's going to happen in this movie.
Yeah, because his name is Max Hell.
Well, this Sam Hell.
Or Sam Hell, Sam Hell, sorry.
This one has a double meaning. One, Sam Hell. Hell literally comes
to Frogtown.
Two, he brings hell with him. Hell comes to Frogtown. 3. Also, I have to say, movie called a movie called Hell Frog comes to Frogtown. I knew nothing about this movie. I knew the title and Roddy Piper is in it, probably post-apocalyptic weirdness.
That's all I need. That's it.
That's all I needed. But however, I thought Frogtown was going to be like a cheeky title for like a rundown town. I was not expecting literal fucking frogs.
Actual frogs. Yeah, I didn't think so
and
either.
And I was like, oh, I was not expecting that. You told me what was going to happen, and I still was surprised.
And they're all slimy and wet and just moist, and you're like, what the hell? So yeah.
Yep.
3.5 out of 5.
This, like, I love this weird matriarchal society it lives in. I love just the Roddy Piper is the most fertile man on the planet.
So confused too by everything.
Yes. Oh my God. Love that it was directed by hold on. They had two directors, but it was directed by, specifically the director I'm thinking of is Donald G. Jackson, who made a really weird documentary about pro wrestling called I Like to Hurt People.
Oh geez. Okay.
And then apparently there's a bunch of Hell Comes to Frogtown sequels.
Yeah, there's three
that do not have Roddy Piper, but I still need to watch them.
Yep.
Same thing with the Highlander movies. I have to eventually get around to watching all those. But I love Hell Comes to Frogtown so much. 5-4.
Oh wow, okay.
Yeah. So
all right. Watch some giallo films. Nothing Underneath, 4 stars out of 5. Heart, Too Beautiful to Die, 3.5 out of 5. Heart, and then a new one for this year, You'll Never Find Me, batshit bonkers movie with a crazy third act.
Batshit bonkers.
First two acts are very dialogue heavy, which is fine, it's very interesting, but the third act will literally blow your tits off. You will not be prepared for the ending of that movie. So that's what I've been watching.
Yeah, the poster. You will not be prepared for the ending of that movie.
You'll never be prepared for this ending.
I used to just love making up taglines and just doing that voice. Like, I came up with an exploitation film I wanted to make called The Bus Driver.
Okay. What's the tagline?
My tagline was the wheels on the bus go kill, kill, kill.
Stop it.
I swear to God, I started writing it and everything. It was going to have Danny Trejo play the bus driver.
Oh my God. What a perfect fucking casting. That's amazing.
Kill. Someone's going to hear this and steal that.
I'll bleep it out. It's fine. goodness. Let's get on to the IMDb roundup. Bam. Yes, we've seen this prior to this viewing. This is Green Room from 2015, released on May 13th of 2016 in the USA. Rated R for strong, brutal graphic violence, gory images, language, and some drug content. There is no sex and nudity. There is severe violence and gore, severe profanity, moderate alcohol, drugs, and smoking, and severe frightening and intense scenes, coming in at an hour and 35 minutes. Listed as a crime, drama, horror, music, thriller. Holy shit. Directed by Jeremy Saulnier, who also directed Murder Party and Blue Ruin, and also written by the same man who wrote both of those movies. Composed by Brooke Blair and Will Blair, who also composed Murder Party, Blue Ruin, Black Christmas 2018, and The Toxic Avenger 2023, which, where's that movie?
I don't know.
I want to see it so bad.
One of the stars of this movie is directing that movie.
Who's the star that's directing?
Macon Blair.
Macon Blair's directing?
Yeah, oh, Macon Blair's directing. And he was the he was, I guess, kind of the meek assistant guy in Blue Ruin.
Yeah, he was
describe him as.
He was Gus, I think.
Yeah.
So we have cinematography by Sean Porter, who also did Green Book and 20th Century Women, edited by Julie Block, who also did Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. We have starring Anton Yelchin, may you rest in peace, brother, as Pat, who was also in Star Trek as Chekhov. We've got the weirdest name ever, Imogen Poots.
I love it.
As Amber, who was also in Vivarium as Gemma. We have Ali Shawkat as Sam, who was also in 84 episodes of Arrested Development as Shaman Shimon. We've got Patrick Stewart as Darcy, who I shouldn't have to explain. And we've got Joe Cole as Reese, who was in 21 episodes of Peaky Blinders as John Shelby. This had an estimated budget of $5 million, only grossing $3.8 million, which is sad. Filmed in Oregon. You can watch this on Cinemax. Movies that came out around the same time, we have Captain America Civil War, Keanu, Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising, The Secret Life of Pets, The Angry Birds Movie, X-Men Apocalypse, Alice Through the Looking Glass, Now You See Me 2, and The Conjuring 2.
What a weird assortment of stuff that came out at that time.
Very weird assortment of stuff. IMDb summary, a punk rock band is forced to fight for survival after witnessing a murder at a neo-Nazi skinhead bar. My overall thoughts on this movie are pretty simple. It's just that I think this is a creative and original story that might be the most tense 95 minutes you'll ever experience. It is brutally tense. You said you felt the same, almost the same way watching it again for the episode. White knuckle. Yeah.
White knuckle the entire time. So this is one of those rare movies that I watch, and as I'm watching it, as a film creative myself, I'm jealous that I didn't fucking write this movie.
Yeah, I mean,
that's honestly how I feel about this movie. I fucking love this movie. It is, I think, a masterclass in tension. It's a it's such a simple little premise, which I love about it. This is where I am a complicated person. I do not like bottle films traditionally, movies that are all set in one location, because I feel like a lot of them kind of run out of steam after a while. There are exceptions, always. There's always exceptions to these rules. But for the most part, I don't get excited for them. But I love siege films, which are essentially bottle films with more action.
Yeah.
And this is a fucking hard, this is just a straight siege film. You watch this back to back with Rio Bravo or Assault on Precinct 13, and they're all in the same fucking vein. Mm-hmm. And I love that. But it sets it in a world that's believable. And in a world where I can see this fucking happening.
Yeah.
You know, and you have some band that just needs some money. Was it dumb of them to take the job with the Nazis? Probably. But when they didn't have enough money to get back home and they're desperate, you know, it's like, it's one of those things like, I don't like these guys, but if I just keep my head down, play our songs and get the fuck out, easy payday. They went in with a fucking agenda to fuck some shit up. But, you know, that's beside the point. I love this movie. And it's kind of an interesting domino effect to watch this movie and be like, where did everything go wrong?
I can trace it back to one moment for sure.
Yeah, so it's like, it's fun going back and bigger. Where did this go wrong? Was there ever a reality in which they would have gotten out of there alive? Sometimes the optimist in me thinks that maybe if they would have played along early enough at the beginning, maybe. But then there's the pessimist in me and be like, they never had a chance.
All right.
I think Gus believed they would have gotten out of there alive, but I don't think they would have.
All right. So I'm going to go back to your point of the struggling band just trying to get by, because I like that point, because they literally made – so they had to go –
$6.
They didn't have to go, but they had a show lined up that fell through, and then the guy was like, we can still put you on a headlining show and it'll be fine, it's like around lunchtime.
Free lunch.
Yeah, and they're like, is anyone else playing? And he's like, no. And they're like, fuck it, whatever. So
that hard cut to the Mexican restaurant.
Yeah, and they're going ham, and then they each make $6 a piece, which for a total is about $24, because there's four people in the band. And then he's like, you know, all right, I've got something else for you guys. Kind of gives them the lowdown, which I got the impression because I went into this movie originally completely blind. This was a movie I saw in theaters with like a girlfriend from way back when. And we just saw, like, it was an A24 movie. And we're like, fuck yeah, let's go see A24 horror. So I went into this not knowing anything. And I got the vibe that I was like, okay, they're going somewhere where is there going to be skinheads there? And then of course they show up and yes, they're all skinheads.
Oh yeah. And if you're into the punk scene, they gave you some little, you know, slang terms, the Mohawk guys, like, oh, it's going to be, you know, red laces and braces, mostly braces being suspenders. That was the old school look for skinheads. And the red laces are, you know, the look. So
red laces, like, and boots. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They said boots, braces, and red lace or something like that. He definitely said braces as well. And I, and you know, the person who spent a lot of time in the world of like reading about punk history and shit, like, oh, I know exactly what he means by this.
Yeah. And then they show up, and yes, it's a skinhead bar. They probably shouldn't have taken it, but it was a $350 payday, which for them trying to get all the way over to DC from Oregon is gonna, that's gonna get them there no problem, because they can only get like one tank of gas off $24, and they're gonna have to siphon the rest of the way to try to get to DC, which is where they wanted to go. So they're like, fuck yeah, we'll take the $350 payday, we'll do this. They get there, and it's like I said, it's a bar full of skinheads, a bar full of neo-Nazis. And I love the fact that the first song that they play, like you said, they went in there with an agenda, and they're like, we're going to play Nazi Punks Fuck Off.
Yeah, I love when Pat's like, I have a really stupid idea.
Yeah, and she's like, what is it? And then he gets up on stage, and he's like, maybe this was a bad idea. And she was like, You came up with this. She's like, if you back out, I'm going to tell them all that you're Jewish. And I was like, Jesus Christ. It's like, oh my God. So they
and play- here's the thing, like they knew they were a bunch of skinheads. They clearly did not know how dangerous they were.
They didn't know the hierarchy of what was going on there. So they play the song, they go, see, and this is where I think they could have gotten away. So the problem is that shit, what was her name? The curly head girl from the group.
Sam.
So Sam, everyone, the main guy, I think his name was like Big J or Big Jeremy or
Big Justin.
Big Justin, there we go. He was telling everybody to follow him, like grab all your shit, let's go. Mm-hmm. And then Sam is like, oh, I forgot my phone. And Pat was like, I'll go get your phone for you. Goes back into the room, was like, hey guys, sorry, grabs the phone, turns around, dead girl on the floor. So if she wouldn't have forgotten her phone, they easily could have gotten out of there no problem, I think.
Yeah, I feel like they would have gotten out of there just fine. I guess what made me believe that maybe things would have been okay is the fact that Macon Blair's character, Gabe, was very confident that like he could fix all of this. He was the least scary one of them all.
And even Daniel is revealed to be a traitor, because him and his girlfriend were going to be leaving that night. So even he was helping them towards the end of the movie, because he's like, hey, if they don't know by now, then like if they don't know, or if they didn't know earlier, they know by now that like I am a traitor. So I know a way to get us out of here, because I want to also leave as well. So you had.
Can I?
Yeah, go ahead.
Please continue.
No, I was going to say.
No, I was going to say, I wanted to point out a really goofy character, but you finish what you're going to say and then I'll point out my thing.
Okay. So yeah, you had Daniel helping them. And then of course that was short lived, because he got shot in the fucking face with a 12 gauge shotgun. And then you had Gabe Macon Blair, who was like, I don't want the cops here and I don't want to go to jail, so just go. So I love that there was two people in the midst of all the tomfoolery that was going on that actually did help them try to escape. So
yeah. There's two things that I found really funny about this movie.
Okay.
One, they are a business. So like, what, at one point when Gabe goes in there to talk to one of the guy in the trailer who had the dog, I don't remember his character's name.
I don't either. But yeah, he had the two dogs.
Yeah. So he when he went in there to like talk to him, what was going on? I just love the idea of this fucking Nazi dude like doing paperwork.
I gotta keep the books, man.
Yeah,
he said that at one point.
Yeah, he's like, I need $600. You just checked out $350. Well, yeah. Someone's dead.
Yeah, I gotta keep the books.
But then, like, later on, when Daniel and another skinhead were going to investigate the green room, I love that so Daniel finally saw what happened to his girlfriend. The other Nazi guy there, I love that he's just wearing a white polo shirt. And I just kept making jokes with Amanda. Like, sorry, guys, I was late to the skinhead rally. My job at Kinko's went long. Because he had a white polo shirt and it was buttoned up all the way. It's like, you fucking nerd.
Yeah. What are you wearing? What is it? Not black and scary? What the fuck?
Yeah, so I just have to point out the polo shirt, the polo shirt skin.
Polo shirt, yeah, polo shirt punk. I love that. So some things that I did enjoy about the movie itself, like I said, I enjoyed them singing Nazi punks fuck off to a bunch of neo-Nazis. That was great. I also enjoyed the story of a struggling band that is just trying to get by. It is something that's been done plenty of times, but I feel like the screenwriter and everybody involved in this really took it to another level when they added all of the moving pieces that they did to this. And the movie gets like, so when you first see the whole thing with Pat going in there retrieving the phone and the girl dead on the floor, that's like 15 minutes into the movie. Like, this movie gets up and goes.
Yeah.
Like sprints to the finish line and then somehow stretches that out for an hour and 15 minutes, like with the most tense storyline ever.
Yeah, like, they could have even stretched out that stuff at the beginning, and I would have enjoyed it because I really like that section of the film, as short as it is. But it is the pacing on this film is just it books the entire movie.
And you think it's going to run out of steam, but it never runs out of steam. Even when Pat is sitting there telling his paintball story to Imogen Poots, and she's like, I want to hear the rest of that story. You're like, all right, this might be a time where it like kind of dies down. No, it doesn't. It doesn't. You're interested in the story of what he's saying, and then it picks right back up. I do love Macon Blair. I think he's a super underrated actor. I loved him in Blue Ruin. He was phenomenal in that.
I've actually still never seen Blue Ruin, and it's a shame.
It is incredible. Honestly, it's the same director as well. It is incredible.
It's funny. I've been on a I'm at the point where I've seen every other movie. I've seen Murder Party and Green Room, but I missed Blue Ruin and Hold the Dark.
Yeah. Okay. I haven't seen Hold the Dark, but Blue Ruin I know is good, and Macon Blair is amazing in that. But I love how
I need to pick up the Blu-ray for that.
Oh, there's a blue. Okay, I'll have to pick
that. I think so.
Macon Blair, his name is Gus in the movie. He's just trying to keep everything under control, and he's doing such a great job at it because he's dealing with Darcy, who is, you know, the head of the neo-Nazi movement there. He's dealing with all the punks there. He's dealing with the people in the room, and he's just trying to do his best. And I commend him for just trying his best.
He's trying to get through this with as little bloodshed as possible.
Right. Man. I just want to go home, man. I'm done with this shit.
I just think of that character from Pineapple Express who was like, I'm done with this. I want to go home and have dinner with my wife.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I seen you pull somebody's jawbone off. I seen it. Yeah, that guy. That's the same exact person, honestly. Yeah, it's the same dude. I can't remember who that guy, what his name is in real life, but I can picture him in his long hair.
He was in Grounded for Life as Uncle Eddie. I remember that.
Yeah, hilarious. So something else I found absolutely hysterical is in the middle of all this tension, right? You have the headlining band, Cowcatcher, I think their name was.
Yeah.
And the lead singer, Ginger Guy, turns to the group before he leaves after all the stuff has gone down. He's like, you know what? You guys are pretty good. What was your second to last song? Yeah. Cool. That's What I Killed Her To. And you're like, God damn.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit. But that was just so funny because he turned to them and like gave them props. He was like, you guys were really good. And I have to agree, they were fucking great. Also, another great part of this is how the show, for a little bit at least, keeps going on after the murders happen. Like, you can hear on the PA system that they have in the room that the show's still going on until Darcy's like, all right, we got to shut this down. Come back Sunday. We'll have free drinks from 2 to 4. You know, enjoy yourselves. It's great.
Yeah, yeah. And there was a little detail that they never really touched on, but I was really curious if this was why they were doing it. So at a certain point, when Darcy kicked everyone out and he has that really like cringe line, it's like, this is not a party, it's a movement. Or but he kicks everyone out of the bar. And then when it cuts back into the green room, there's still music playing. And I was like, oh, are they pumping in music to keep the band feeling comfortable, thinking that there's still people there?
That's
what I was wondering. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a subtle little detail that I liked.
Because they also, at one point when the cops had already come and gone, Darcy comes to the door and they're like, have the cops come yet? And they're like, no, he's like, no, they haven't been here yet. And I'm like, they've already come and gone. So he lied to them about the cops coming and going. So they definitely were pumping in music to make
I like that.
It's a subtle detail.
Nice detail. Because, you know, they didn't want them panicking right away either. So
yeah, they had to keep them kind of under control. And that kind of ties into the next thing I wanted to talk about, which is the scene where Darcy's on one side with the red laces and everyone else is on the other side. Well, not everyone else, but the band plus Imogen Poots. And that whole conversation that they had was extremely tense. And because you're an, you know, we're the audience looking in as a third party, knowing that there's four guys with red laces ready to kill every single person in that room. And they're trying to just negotiate, like, okay, we'll give up the gun. It's fine. You can have it, blah, blah, blah. And Pat puts his hand through the door to give them the gun, and Imogen Poots is like, no, there's no, like, and so he tries to pull his arm back, and then he gets his arm just ripped to shreds and pulls it back in. And it's, that is my, I'm going to just transition into my horror moment, because that is my horror moment of the movie, is when he pulls his hand back in and it is just ripped to shreds. He, you've got his wrist that's just cut on the top side. And it's like falling over. Oh, it's so bad.
Did you see the alternate poster for this movie that uses that shot?
No, there's an alternate poster.
Hold on, I have to send this to you.
Okay.
Cut this little bit out because it's not fun for anyone. Or do you want me to show you on the live stream?
Just show me on the live stream if you can pull it up quickly. Yeah.
I'm pulling it up now. So
you're familiar
with the Black Flag poster, right? So someone did a green room poster that is,
That is brilliant. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I have, honestly,
it makes me squeam a little bit.
I have not seen that. That is fucking amazing. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I had to there's so many good moments in this movie that I have to think a little bit about what would that's probably one of my, that would probably be my go-to.
I figured that would be most people's horror moment. But if there's another one, please.
That's because it's tense before the up leading till then.
Oh yeah.
But then from that moment on, it becomes a survival for their life.
Especially when Joe Cole's character Reese has Big Justin in that arm lock. I'm waiting for him to break his arm, and that happens at the same moment when Pat's character gets cut up. The second that Pat's arm starts getting cut up, Joe Cole just breaks Big Justin's arm in half, and you're like, oh my god.
I would say my other one would be so it would be when they get out of the green room and the dog comes after them, and they all kind of have to they all just go different directions.
Disperse.
Reese goes through the bathroom window, and the second he gets out there, he just gets stabbed multiple times. And it's so unsettling. It's just such an unceremonious death. And it's one fucking coward just sneaks up on someone. And two, I kept thinking throughout the entire process, there's how many red laces out there ready to fuck shit up, and they couldn't kill five people.
Right? Five novices that have no clue what they're doing.
I'm not saying these races are trained military guys or whatever, but it's assumed that most of them gain those laces by doing some act of violence for the party.
Well, that's how Macon Blair got his, because he gets his at the end of the movie. Darcy's like, you've earned these. Here you go. Yep. So they have to have get them.
You fucked some shit up to get to that.
Yeah, you fucked some shit up.
People who have this, who have experience in violence, couldn't take out this fucking band.
Yeah.
Plus Emily.
And that's what I love about this movie, is they weren't ready for these people just they want to survive. I mean, of course, only Pat and Imogen Poots survive, so there's only two survivors, but everyone is ready to survive and try to get out of there alive. But I'll go into my favorite kill, which was the same moment as Joe Reese dying, or Joe Cole dying, and that's the I think his name is Tiger, when he gets the dog to the jugular. That's my favorite kill. I was like, oh my God, it was so gory, so disgusting. I had to mention.
Yeah, my favorite kill comes later in the movie.
Okay.
When Imogen Poots's character Amber
comes
out of the fucking couch
Yes.
With the box cutter.
With the box cutter. So good.
Yeah, that was good. My favorite moment. Such a because you don't expect it when she just fucking rises up from under the couch like Danny DeVito and It's Always Sunny.
It's always
you
don't expect. She had a Danny DeVito moment.
Yeah.
So I only have two real dislikes with the movie, and they go as such. Why the fuck did Pat immediately dial 911, bro? I didn't see anything. Bye. Like, why did you dial 911 immediately?
I feel like there was a chance to that he would have been like, I didn't see anything, and just fucking escape. I don't think he would have gotten, but I think he would have gotten a little bit farther.
I would have been like, I literally don't know anybody here.
I don't even know where we are.
Yeah, I don't even know where we are. Good luck with that. Like, here, you can have my phone. Fuck it. I don't give a shit. Take my phone. I'm leaving.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah.
And then the other time when the group tried to like take over the whole situation, I would have been like, guys, just sit down, shut up, just ride it out for now. Don't try and take over the situation. You have a gun. It's okay. So that's really my only dislikes, but it's just like character decisions that they made.
Which, you know, I think actually makes the movie, it definitely makes the movie better. Like,
oh, yeah.
Characters have to make bad decisions.
Right.
To progress the story,
yeah. and to make it, you know, and to keep the tension going. But my hot take on this movie is I don't like Patrick Stewart as the bad guy, but it's because he does it too fucking well, and
it makes you uncomfortable.
It makes me uncomfortable. I've never seen him in a role like this before, and I hate every time he's on screen. I am petrified of this man. So it's not that I don't like him, his performance. It's too good of a performance.
He almost has this calming quality. Yes. When he first shows up and
it's like, all right, everybody, like, let them do their work. Let them do their job.
Yeah. It's almost like the first time I saw this movie, I was almost like, okay, maybe things will get better now that Patrick Stewart's here. He seems level-headed. Nope. Not at all.
Not gonna fucking happen. No. The moment I was hooked was when they sung Nazi Punks Fuck Off to an entire crowd of neo-Nazis. I know most... what's yours? Is it different? Oh,
no. Mine is really stupid, and it's very...
I love it.
It's a very music nerd moment.
Okay.
It was when they were all sitting around giving their Desert Island bands.
Okay.
And them all trying to be like a hard, like punk band, just giving punk answers. And then when they had the, so I was like, okay, I like this. So they're giving this, these really like nerdy punk bands for their Desert Island band. And I also just love the character of Tad, the guy who's interviewing them. He's like such a dork and such a lovable dork. And I love that at the end of the movie, you got to see him actually vacuuming his carpet.
Yeah.
But the reason I love that was like my thrill house moment. I was like, okay, you know, the people who wrote this movie have a true love for this genre. But then when you have the payoff later on to find out what everyone's Desert Island bands actually were.
You don't get great. To hear Pat's.
No. However, the director has confirmed in an AMA that Pat's is Creedence Clearwater Revival because Pat doesn't get to say his, and then it cuts to a CCR song.
Okay. Yeah, because he's talking to
Amber,
and he's like, I figured it out. She's like, figure what out? It's like my Desert Island song. She's like, tell it to someone who gives a shit.
Like, I love
that's
Amber.
How the movie she's ends.
Like, I love when Amber, in a moment of panic, is like, Madonna. And Slayer,
yeah.
And she's saying it to herself.
Like, yeah, she's not saying it to anybody in the room.
No.
Did you have I usually don't have a favorite line. I always include it just in case there is. But my favorite line for this movie was, thank you, that was a cover.
That was mine too.
Yes!
That was mine
yes!
too.
So perfect. You're just like, wow, yeah, that was Dead Kennedys. Thank you.
I'm gonna add a piece of criteria to yours.
Yes.
The most touching moment in the entire movie is when the Nazi dog laid down on his dead owner.
Oh, I know. I didn't.
Broke my fucking heart.
I didn't expect to have my heartstrings pulled in this movie, but here we are.
That was my my most heartbreaking moment.
Yeah, just like, oh, son of a... I love when the dog is passing Amber and Pat. They're like pointing the gun at it and just like, don't you fucking dare. And he's like,
he
no.
Just wanted to go, he just wanted to go by his owner.
I just want to go by my owner. Yeah, performances, everyone feels real and genuine. They all express fear and emotion well. Cinematography. Did you also feel like there was a slight kind of green hue or tint?
Oh, definitely was.
Yeah, which is perfect because the movie's Green Room.
It's funny, too. So, look, I put a lot of effort and time into my picture quality on my TV.
Yeah.
My TV had a harsh green push to begin with. So when I took a lot of that out, this movie is still very green. I went back to like my uncalibrated settings and was like, oh shit, it's even greener.
Mm-hmm. So it's very green. And then the score is very ominous at points where it needs to be, but also super fucking punk rock.
Mm-hmm.
Love the score. Any closing thoughts here before we go to the, after review wrap up here, sir?
Other than I just really love this movie and I think, if you've missed out on it, you should really go check it out.
Yes.
There's still a very easy to find Blu-ray by Lionsgate. I think Second Sight has put out a 4K.
They have, yes.
I haven't decided if I'm going to upgrade yet, but like I love this movie and I feel like I want to, but I've spent a lot of money upgrading movies that I've already owned.
Yeah,
so I haven't decided if I'm gonna do that yet, but like it's worth checking out. It's great. I say there's a lot to love in it, even if you don't really like the punk. If you hate Nazis, like which you should, this is a fun time.
So it should be for everyone, except for neo-Nazis. So let's go to some after review stuff here. Taglines. This doesn't feel much as a tagline as it does just like a line from the movie, but the tagline is now. Whatever you saw or did is no longer my concern, but let's be clear, it won't end well. That is way too long of a tagline, but that's what I found on IMDb. Trivia, Sir Patrick Stewart said in an interview that when he finished reading the script at his home country in England, it was so terrifying that he locked up his house, turned on the security system, and poured himself a scotch. He knew then that he wanted to play Darcy Banker, because a character that horrifying would be an incredible challenge and make for a compelling movie. And he fucking killed it.
I also love that he wanted to do this movie.
Yeah, he wanted to. He's like, I'm here for this. Yeah, that's phenomenal. If you can get Patrick Stewart to be like, I want to do a movie, good for you.
he probably read the script, drank his scotch, called his agent and said, make it so.
Make it so. So I did find one goof, and that's when the band first has Big Justin hostage there. There's a telephone on the table next to him. I don't know if it was hooked up, but there is a telephone right there. So I don't know, it's one of those things like it was one of the receiver telephones. So I don't know if it was hooked up, but there was a phone there that they may have been able to use.
Easily explained away though.
Yeah, easily explained away, but it's just something to think about. Rated 7.0 out of 10 on IMDb, 3.8 out of 5 on Letterboxd, has a certified fresh rating of 90% on the tomato meter and a 75% audience score. You gave this what?
I don't want to misquote myself. Give me a second.
I think I might raise my rating a little bit here after talking.
I gave mine a solid 5.
Okay, I'm going to raise mine to a 4.5 out of 5 then because I was at a 4, but talking about it really, and that's why I always wait till the end of my podcast to do the ratings because it can always change. So I'll give it a 4.5 out of 5. So that is a Frightmare certified slap. Similar movies according to Letterboxd, we have High Tension, The Hitcher, Eden Lake, Midnight Meat Train, and The Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2003. Similar movies, according to IMDb, we have Blue Ruin, It Follows, The Invitation, 10 Cloverfield Lane, and The Ritual. Let's read some funny reviews we found on Letterboxd.
All right, you want to start or should I?
I'll send it over to you so I can get myself ready to go here. All right, okay. Yeah, go ahead.
I've got a couple of them. Okay, I'm going to start with my first one. This is by Justin LaLiberty. He gave the movie 4 stars and a heart. He said, those scary Nazi fuckers are really concerned about fire safety.
The fire code. Oh, that's a fire hazard, yeah. 4.5 stars from Lucy. The room was not actually green. There you go.
I'm going to see your 4.5 stars by Lucy and give you another 4.5 stars by Lucy.
Oh.
I got another review from her.
Okay.
I think I have internal bleeding because this movie just beat me up with a bass guitar.
Okay. I'll see your 4.5 and raise you a 4.5 by Laird. And it just says, tough crowd.
All right. I'll see that and I'll give you a 5-star rating.
Oh.
That says, I went out and committed a murder directly after watching this movie.
Jesus Christ. Well, I'm going to downgrade to a 4-star from Isaac that says, it's kind of like Inglourious Basterds, except punk.
Kind of. How many more you got?
I've got 2 more.
All right, I'll give you 2. I got 2 more.
Okay.
Okay. I don't know which one of these to go with because they're both kind of funny. But there's a, okay, I'm going to go with this one. This was Colin Movie. He gave it a 0.5-star review.
Oh God.
And said the scene with the dog at the end made me a little sad face.
Yeah. Same. I've got a 0.5-star here from Ryan Swaney. Watched on acid. Never again. Yeah. That might've been your problem there, guy.
This one's not funny. I'm amused by its, dedication to this stupid style of reviewing.
Okay.
It's from Emilio. He gave it a 0.5-star. He continues then to rate different things in the movie. Plot, 5. Actors, 8. Characters, 1. Music, 0. Pacing, 3. The cinematographic is how he wrote it, 5. Ending, just a little M dash. All he wrote.
What the hell kind of rating system is that?
I have no clue.
0.5-star from Juliana. This movie was so bad, I wish I was actually trapped in a room with Nazis. I really feel like you don't. But okay, Juliana.
All right, I'll give 1 more.
Do it.
It's a 0.5-star by Gia. They voluntarily accepted to play in an obviously Nazi place. Hey, money's tight.
Money's tight, man. Come on. Don't hate. Where can everybody hear the sultry sound of your voice on your podcast, Michael?
All right. So the sultry sounds of my voice can be heard at the Shameless Picture Show. We are on all of your favorite podcast apps of choice. We can also be found on the Cinepunks Network. This weekend, we have a new episode going up about the movie Smithereens, where I'm joined by Professor Susan Kearns, who just wrote a book called Refocus, the films of Susan Seidelman, where we talk about Susan Seidelman, Smithereens. Austin actually cut that episode, so you guys should all be listening to it. So that's going up this week. And then I have an interview that I also need to cut. We'll see if I get to it. Because starting next week, I'm going to be press for the Milwaukee Film Festival. So I will be seeing about 1 to 2 movies every single day for 2 weeks.
Woo!
And all of my episodes are going to have to be focused on that. So
okay,
there's going to be no editing. It's just going to be me and Amanda sitting down and doing a special film festival report. And yes, in that time, if I can, I'm going to try to get an episode cut together with Maggie Greenwald, the director of Ballad of Little Joe. Keanu Warber just put that movie out for the first time since the 90s, and it's a gem of a feminist Western.
Beautiful. I love it. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Slasher app at Frightmares Podcast, or email us staysspooky@outlook.com. You can also follow me personally on Letterboxd at Dr. Proctor. Michael is Viers10 2008. Go check him out.
I love that you remember that every time.
Oh yeah. I've got it written down right here. Next week, me and my buddy John will be back doing The Killing of a Sacred Deer from 20-something. I can't remember. So until then, stay tuned and
stay spooky. Spooky. Jump on, what a man.
drowning the peace state winds. Snap your bags into trash holes. Trash your bag if you got real balls. You still think such a good as the gold. You build Nazis for your schools and coaches. Business women cops. No fuck right, even first to go. Nazi punch, Nazi punch, Nazi punch. Fuck up, Nazi punch, Nazi punch, Nazi punch. Fuck up. First to go, you've been the first to go. You've been the first to go, you've been around the last shoot thing.
Thank you, that was a cover.